This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
They indicate that the purpose of attacking police officers was first of all to acquire arms and also to eliminate police officers as one of their enemies, because they were looking at police officers as an obstacle to their struggle to overthrow government.
That's Ugandan police spokesperson Fred Inanga on the arrest of 29 suspected members of the newly formed rebel group that is believed to be trying to overthrow the government. Details coming up. And Cameroon's military has released health workers who are working for the aid group Doctors Without Borders. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Former South African President Thabo Mbeki says Archbishop Desmond Tutu's harsh criticism of the ruling African National Congress, the ANC, in the final years of his life was totally correct. Mbeki, who followed Nelson Mandela to lead South Africa from 1999 to 2008, was reflecting on Tutu's legacy on national television. Tutu, a former anti-apartheid activist and recognized as one of the world's best moral leaders, died Sunday at the age of 90. Darren Taylor reports.
Tutu had supported the ANC in its fight against apartheid since he was a young Anglican cleric, but he had no problem criticizing it even when his great friend Mandela was president from 1994 to 1999. Tutu, however, really began breaking ranks with the ANC shortly after Jacob Zuma deposed Mbeki in 2008. The Archbishop was an implacable opponent of Zuma, a man who had, and still has, clouds of corruption hanging over him, and also a man accused, but cleared, of raping a young woman. In 2011, Tutu blasted the ANC as worse than the apartheid government for being selfish and for neglecting poor South Africans. 2 years later, Tutu was deeply hurt when the ANC refused to allow him to speak at Mandela's funeral. Ahead of the 2014 elections, as the ANC government's corruption under Zuma intensified, Tutu said people should consider praying for its downfall.
I won't vote for them. That is something that I have said. And I say it with a very strong, very heavy heart.
Mbeki says South Africa now has a much better president in Cyril Ramaphosa, but many of the problems that worsened under Zuma remain.
So long as you have all of these huge poverty levels, huge inequalities in terms of opportunity, of wealth, of income and all of that, so long as you are two nations, you can't achieve this reconciliation. So it's important to really address this matter of the fundamental transformation of our society.
Tutu blamed ongoing poverty and inequality largely on the ANC's failure to institute good economic policies and on its poor governance and corruption. Mbeki says Tutu was right when he slammed the ANC for not being honest about its past failures.
The majority of the people who are involved in corrupt practices in government will in the main be ANC members. Those ANC must answer the question openly to the people. What happened that this ANC should carry in its ranks this kind of person, who is therefore acting in a way that is very inconsistent with the historic values of the ANC, and so it's got to answer.
But Zuma and others in the ruling party started their allegedly corrupt practices under Mandela and Mbeki, both who did little to curb them.
And I'm saying that the ANC needs to reflect practically, realistically, truthfully on what went wrong with itself. Because indeed many things went wrong with itself, and hence...
This is exactly what the ANC did not do in late 1998 when Mbeki rejected the final report of South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the TRC, which Tutu had chaired. The TRC found that while the ANC had waged a just war against apartheid, some of its cadres were guilty of gross human rights violations. The ANC was outraged that Tutu and his fellow commissioners had branded some of its members war criminals on the same level as apartheid's foot soldiers. But Tutu stuck to his guns and refused to amend the TRC's findings. The Archbishop urged the government to prosecute those from all sides of the conflict who'd failed to apply for amnesty for human rights abuses committed during apartheid. Up until today, the ANC, including under Mbeki, has not done so. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Sudanese authorities say at least 38 people were killed when a defunct gold mine collapsed in West Kordofan province. The country's state-run mining company said in a statement the collapse of the closed mine took place yesterday in a village 700 kilometers south of the capital Khartoum. The mining company posted images on Facebook showing villagers gathering at the site as at least two dredgers worked to find possible survivors and bodies. The company says the mine is not functional, but local miners returned to work after forces guarding the site left the area. It did not say when the mine stopped working. Ugandan police have arrested 29 suspected members of a newly formed rebel group. The group is suspected to be behind the killings of police officers as part of a plot to overthrow Uganda's government. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Uganda police say their intelligence reports indicate the newly formed rebel group, codenamed the Uganda Coalition Forces of Change, targets police officers and police posts. Unknown gunmen also attacked two police posts this month, killed about six police officers, and made away with an unspecified number of guns. Police spokesperson Freddy Nanga told reporters that the arrested suspects have admitted being members of the rebel group. Nanga says efforts are underway to track all the members of the group.
They indicate that the purpose of attacking police officers was first of all to acquire arms and also to eliminate police officers as one of their enemies, because they were looking at police officers as an obstacle to their struggle to overthrow government. We've directed our resources in form of manpower and logistics to help fight this threat.
Enanga has warned politicians suspected of sponsoring the group that they risk arrest.
There are people who are still probably angered by the outcome of the general elections, but the voice of the majority of the Ugandans was actually heard. Therefore, those politicians accelerating themes of violence and encouraging recruitment of young adults into acts of violent extremism should actually stop it. But we also want to caution the youth who are being recruited. There's no justification for joining a rebel group during this period.
Meanwhile, the army, the UPDF, is celebrating the takeover of a base of the Allied Democratic Forces, ADF. The group, originally formed in Uganda, shifted its base to forests in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Major Peter Mugisa is the Army's Mountain Division spokesperson. He says the captured base, Kambi Yayua, was home to an estimated 600 ADF rebels and their families. Mugisa says this is a great stride in the efforts to eliminate the rebel group.
That's where Musa Baluku, the commander of ADF, used to stay. It's the camp that ADF used to launch terror attacks to the people of Congo and also Uganda. And by capturing it, it means that we have failed their will to fight.
Early this month, the UPDF and the armed forces of DRC launched a joint attack on the ADF rebels. This followed a series of bomb attacks on Uganda, including a twin bombing in Kampala that killed four people and three suicide attackers. Uganda government has since blamed the bombing on the ADF. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
An outspoken critic of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, prominent novelist Kakwenzi Ruk Irbashayjaz, has been arrested in Kampala. His lawyer, Aaron Kiza, told the French news agency AFP that armed men claiming to be from the Ugandan police force broke into Kakwenza's home and whisked him away. Kakwenza won acclaim for his 2020 satirical novel, The Greedy Barbarian, which describes high-level corruption in a fictional country. The novelist recently stepped up criticism of Museveni's son, a general who many Ugandans believe is positioning himself to take over from his 77-year-old father. Kakwenza was selected by the Penn Pitcher Prize to win this year's International Writer Courage Award, which is presented annually to a writer who has been persecuted for speaking out about their beliefs. Earlier this month, the U.S. imposed sanctions on the head of Uganda's military intelligence unit, Abel Kandiho, accusing him of leading interrogations of detained individuals targeted for their political views. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington, and here's a recap of our top stories. A gold mine has collapsed in Sudan's West Kordofan province, killing at least 38 people. And an outspoken critic of President Yoweri Museveni, a prominent Ugandan novelist, has been arrested. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Cameroon's military has released health workers detained for several days who are working for the aid group Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF. The military says the workers were helping a wounded rebel leader who was also detained, and they are still being investigated. MSF has condemned the detentions, the latest incident between the group and Cameroon's military, as Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's military alleged that Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, this week deliberately engaged in a clandestine operation to exfiltrate armed rebels. In a statement, the military says Mbu Princely Tabe and Besong Eugene, two self-proclaimed separatist generals, contacted MSF Sunday to help fighters wounded in a battle with Cameroon government troops in Tinto, a southwestern farming village. The statement by military spokesperson Army Captain Cyril Saech Atongfa Gemo says after a tip-off, an ambulance belonging to MSF was intercepted by the military in Guti, with Mbu Princely receiving treatment inside the ambulance. Guti is a commercial town in Cameroon's English-speaking southwest region. The military said one of the rebel generals, Besong Eugene, died and was buried in the bush before MSF arrived to save the lives of wounded fighters. Bernard Okalia Bilai is governor of Cameroon's southwest region. Bilai says he is surprised that MSF decided to help a dreaded self-proclaimed separatist general who was wounded in an armed battle with government troops. He says the dangerous fighter has killed many civilians and destroyed a great deal of property, including public edifices. Bilai says MSF was helping the criminal known by the Cameroon government troops as a terrorist to escape from the military. Bilai said two MSF staff held by the military for questioning were released after 2 days, but gave no further details. MSF has denied it was helping any rebels to escape from the military. In a statement, MSF said Sunday the aid group contacted Cameroon military authorities and informed government troops of plans to transfer a wounded patient for medical assistance in Motengene, another English-speaking southwestern town. MSF says its ambulance was intercepted by government forces and taken to a different location. In the statement, MSF says it treats people based on medical need, regardless of their background or affiliations. Felix Agbobala is a human rights lawyer and founder of the Center for Human Rights and Democracy in Africa. Bala says MSF is working in accordance with the Geneva Conventions, which require people wounded in conflicts to be treated humanely without any adverse distinction based on sex, race, nationality, religion, political opinions, or any other similar criteria. Bala says MSF cannot give the identities of all the people it is treating to the military as requested by the government.
If Doctor Without Borders starts informing government in detail of each and every patient, then the independence, the confidentiality is no longer there. Government is trying to put Doctor Without Borders in harm's way. I would recommend that Doctors Without Borders and the government should really sit down and have a discussion. Government can criticize Doctor Without Borders, but we should not forget the wonderful job that Doctor Without Borders have been doing in this country.
MSF has been in Cameroon since 1984. The aid group gives medical assistance to people suffering Boko Haram atrocities in Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. MSF provides surgical care, malaria treatment, and treatment for COVID-19 patients in Cameroon's restive English-speaking southwest region. The group says it treated more than 1 million patients in Cameroon in 2020. In 2020, Cameroon suspended MSF from carrying out activities in the English-speaking northwest region. The government accused MSF of having close relations with separatists who are fighting to create an independent English-speaking state. The aid organization strongly denies the accusations and says its only goal is to save lives. The UN says the separatist crisis that began in Cameroon's English-speaking regions in 2017 has killed more than 3,300 people and displaced 750,000 both internally and to neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Rights groups in Kenya are pushing authorities to resettle tens of thousands of squatters evicted just ahead of the holidays to make way for a Chinese-backed expressway. Brenda Molinya reports from Nairobi.
Kenyan Lucy Wangare, in her 40s, cleans a makeshift tent that has provided her family flimsy shelter since October, when Nairobi city authorities evicted them from their home of almost 2 decades. She, her husband, and her sister spend the holiday season living in the tent, enduring cold and wet nights. City authorities evicted more than 40,000 squatters like Wangari from Mukuru kwa Jenga slum and razed their homes to make way for construction of the Nairobi Expressway. What is left of the Mukuru slum looks like a wasteland, with scores of makeshift tents forming a small island. Authorities gave them just days' notice to vacate their homes, says Wangari. If you look at where I sleep, she says, you'd think I wasn't a Kenyan citizen. You'd think I was a refugee. Wangari says they used to have property in houses, but right now they've been left destitute. She blames Kenya's government. The $500 million elevated expressway aims to ease Nairobi's notorious traffic by connecting the main international airport to the city center and the wealthy suburbs. the Chinese state-owned China Road and Bridge Corporation is building and financing the expressway, which should be working in 2022 and will collect the tolls for nearly three decades. Despite critics calling it a road for the rich, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta defended the project while taking a tour of it the day before Christmas.
The difference that is being occasioned by the road building, by the drainage being put in, by the sewage being put in, I do believe that within another 2 years, Nairobi will be a truly 21st century city, catering for its population in a positive manner and in a manner befitting our people.
But Kenyan right activists fought the government for not striking a balance between the need for infrastructure and human dignity for those evicted. 25-year-old Anami Daudi is with the Mukuru Community Justice Center.
It's so traumatizing. People are having mental issues here. We have other special challenges here. They should get like special attention. But you find out that even the facilities that we have around, they can't maybe even accommodate or maybe to create that space to provide such services.
The single squatters left homeless like 38-year-old Pauline Gathoni struggle with security fears. It's very dangerous to spend the night here, she says, especially for us women. Gathoni says the men can defend themselves if attacked, but she can't fight anybody. If someone attacks me and steals my property, tells me to leave, she says, I will have no choice but to obey them. City authorities' promises to compensate and help resettle the evicted families have yet to come true. Brenda Molinya for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, has opened a research center in Somalia to combat climate change. Severe drought and flooding displaced nearly 500,000 Somalis last year, as Mohamed Kayi reports from Mogadishu.
The new center located in Somali capital will conduct research, collect data and analyze and disseminate new information on climate change in the Horn of Africa. Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, popularly known as Farmajo, opened the new center at the ceremony Thursday. He said it will play a key role in helping Somalia tackle climate change-related challenges.
The center will focus on ways and means to utilize research, data and scientific knowledge to help the region cope with climate change and achieve environmental sustainability. We have set aside a strategically located facility, and we will take a leading role in resource mobilization.
In recent years, Somalia has faced severe drought and famine, which is attributed to climate change. IGAD Secretary General Wokne Gebeyehu says the famine has hurt economic activity across the region.
These extreme weather events, Excellency, have wider implications from the regional economy and especially the agriculture and livestock sectors. IGAD region is home of 520 million heads of livestock, two animals for every one of us, most of which are reared in fragile, arid and semi-arid environments that are frontiers to climate change.
The establishment of the new IGAD center in Somalia comes at a time when the country is experiencing ravages of drought, floods and locust infestation, which are linked to patterns of climate change. Mohamed Kahi for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Ihelius Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
The best music comes from Africa. An African beat gives you the best of the best. From Benga to Juju, Hip Life to Bonga Flavor, Afrobeat to Ndombolo and Makossa to Kwaito. All happening right here on the African beat of the Voice of America. Monday through Friday, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time. With me, your host, David Vandy.